Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd on the Double with the Double S Express.
Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to this edition of On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Boyd alongside, and yes, I do mean alongside Sean Wally in the EG Studios in Elk Grove, California. Sean Wally, how you doing, man?
Sean, great to be here with you in the 916, a busy packed show. Let's get to it.
Man, so let's get right to it. We're going to go out to the Chandler Reach Winery phone lines and bring in guest number one, and that is none other than Scott Baer of CSN Bay Area, Oakland Raiders insider. Scott, how you doing today?
Pretty good, boys. How's it going?
Well, man, thank you for being on the Double, man. We've got some stuff to talk about here with week one in Oakland and some great things happening with the Raiders, man. A win against the St. Louis Rams. Now, I know we can't put too much into it, but what can we say about the Oakland Raiders in the first game of the preseason?
Well, you can say something positive about them, which is pretty rare over the last three or four seasons when they've been the laughingstock of the entire league and really have never been able to get it going or really have an established, you know, coach for more than a couple of years and haven't had a quarterback and haven't had a good pass rusher. And you're definitely starting to see a young foundation come together with some discipine under new head coach Jack Del Rio. And while it is only week one of the preseason, and you can't get too excited about that, it was pretty clear that this team, at least right now, definitely looks better than it has in years past.
Now, Scott, let's talk about that. Of course, the Raiders have gone through coaches and like a coaching carousel over the past, my goodness, I'd say 12 years. What's different about Jack Del Rio and what he is doing with this organization early on?
Well, first things first is that Jack Del Rio has some real clout within this organization, and that comes from a long time when Mark Davis's owner, Al Davis, was running this organization and going through coaches on a pretty regular basis, and Al definitely had the first, second, third, and final say on everything that happened. And Dennis Allen, over the last couple of years, didn't have any real traction with the owner, and I definitely think that that's really helped create some change, some positive changes around these Oakland Raiders. They have a completely upgraded team practice facility, which, guys, was literally like an office building from the 1970s that they threw a bunch of weights in. So they definitely upgraded there. And Jack Del Rio really has a pretty positive vibe going and a very strict code of discipline that he's kind of instilled in these guys, so they're more organized. They're passionate, yet somehow it's still fun. And while Jack Del Rio loves talking about the old Raider glory days from the 70s and the, you know, 80s and all the way up to the early 2000s, he has strictly forbidden talk about the dysfunction from 2003 to really last season. So I definitely think he's focusing on the right things. He has these guys believing. And I say all that positive stuff with this one caveat. Yeah, it sounds good, and yeah, they're moving in the right direction, but does that mean that they're going to be better? Yes. Good? I don't know about that. They have a long, long way to go on the road back to respectability.
Scott, you mentioned head coach Jack Del Rio and bringing discipline to the table and the field in Napa. How much is that needed in Oakland, and how different is that from previous years?
It's definitely different. Just in talking to some veterans, free agents who came in last season, they were always pretty surprised about the lack of organization with the most recent coaching staff. And I think that really that's been a major change. Now, in terms of the Raiders that you like to think of, the bad boys that probably put, you know, cement underneath the tape on top of their hands and did all kinds of funky stuff and beat up people on the field and off of it, that's really not the case anymore. General manager Reggie McKenzie has brought in a lot of high-character guys, and it's funny because you think about all the problems that the San Francisco 49ers are having with the law, and the Raiders haven't had an arrest, knock on wood, because it'll save my night, since July of 2013. So it is more disciplined. The players that they brought in are naturally like that, and that's why I think finally you're seeing an upgrade in talent that a coaching staff can really work with. So it does seem to be a good match for the right players at the right time.
You mentioned that Jack Del Rio brings clout back to the organization. Not only that, but he brings an all-star coaching staff with him, like the Ken Norton Juniors and guys that have been around the league a long time.
Yeah, I think there's a total of 104 years collective playing experience between all of his position coaches. And, of course, there's, you know, Ken Norton and, you know, even guys, you know, who maybe weren't absolute stars like Bernie Parmalee and Rob Moore. And, of course, everybody knows who All-Pro safety Marcus Robertson and Hall of Famer Rod Woodson are, who lead the secondary. And that's all well and good. And the players get asked quite a bit, how much does it help having former players as coaches now? And they all say that it adds an element of respectability to what the coaches say. The players are more willing to buy in because these guys have seen it through a player's lens. Now, you talked to Jack Del Rio about that. He was a pretty darn good middle linebacker in his own right. And he says that works for about 15 minutes because eventually these players ultimately want to get their next contract and they want to get a lot of playing time and be put in a position to win. And if you don't do that, whether you played or not, eventually doesn't matter. But I can tell you one thing, it's made for a very spirited, very positive training camp. But once we get to the regular season, they start 0-4, all that goes out the window. So for right now, it's good, but they need to carry it over, especially with a fast start to begin the regular season.
Scott Barrett, CSN Bay Area, and the Oakland Raiders insider joining us here on the Double. Now, Scott, we're talking about the defensive side of the ball with Ken Norton Jr. being an added bonus as the defensive coordinator. Of course, you have Jack Del Rio, who's a linebacker as well. And then Reggie McKenzie, who was a linebacker in his day as well with the Oakland Raiders. Are we going to see a solid, top-notch linebacking core, something similar to what's going on in Seattle, dare I say?
They definitely invested in linebackers, both in the draft and in free agency. They brought in a couple of veterans in Curtis Lofton and Malcolm Smith, and they're counting on Theo Moore and Ray Ray Armstrong and a couple of fifth-round draft picks to really contribute to what is a much stronger linebacker core. And it's so much deeper, as a matter of fact, that they can move Khalil Mack down to play defensive end. But that's less of a reflection of their coaches and more a reflection on what happened last season when they were absolutely decimated. And their two members of their starting three linebackers are now out of football. Nobody even wants to pay them anymore. And that's how bad it got. That's how thin it got, that they were playing guys off the practice squad and were completely overmatched. They don't want that to happen again. And what was the team's most glaring weakness has become a strength.
Now, one of the added bonuses for Oakland on the offensive side as we switch there, Rod Streeter is back for the first time, and it sounds like he had a good practice.
Yeah, he did. And this is a guy who was an undrafted free agent out of Temple in 2012. He led the team in with 888 receiving yards in 2013 and missed most of last year with a fractured foot. And he was the top guy on this team really because the receiver core was so bad. He was the only guy of real strong quality. Now they have number 4 overall draft pick, Amari Cooper, and they have Michael Crabtree, and it's going to be hard for even a guy like Rod Streeter to crack the starting lineup. I mean, he's even going to have to fight to be the number 3 wideout and possibly play in the slot, a role that I do think that he'll eventually win throughout the course of this training camp. But it speaks his place on this depth chart speaks to a larger point that the Raiders' receiving corps was absolutely awful the last 2 years. It was probably their most glaring need that they didn't fill. And this season, they really went out and got some talent, got some guys that work hard. And whether the motivation is financial, like it is with Michael Crabtree, who wants to get paid one more time, or if it's a guy like Amari Cooper trying to prove himself in this league, or Rod Streeter showing that he's healthy again, Derek Carr finally has some weapons in his passing game. I think that's going to help this young Sentinel caller out quite a bit.
Now, Scott, you mentioned the Raiders' number one draft pick, wide receiver Amari Cooper. How big of a rookie season can he have?
If you're playing fantasy, I'd strongly think about him in the early rounds. And if you're in a PPR league, you might as well jump for joy with this kid, because he's going to get targeted a lot. He's an excellent route runner. He has more deceptive speed than you may think. He just happens to be a long strider that kind of belies the fact that he runs a 4.42, and that's pretty darn quick. So he's been good. I will say, everybody touting that how great he's going to be and that he'll be the next in a long line of rookie wideouts to make a real impact. And I believe all those things. And I'm not telling you guys to pump the brakes, but he does have rookie moments. You look at that Friday game where Derek Carr threw an interception, and Derek Carr would never say it, but I'm going to put that on the wide receiver who should have flattened his route because he should have read that play a little bit differently. And those are things that rookies are going to do in their first year. That's why it's so beneficial to have Michael Crabtree across the other side from him. But just pure talent, footwork, route running ability, this kid, Amari Cooper, has it all. And I think he's going to have a very strong first season if he stays healthy. And if he continues along this career path, they will continue to get stronger. And that's because not only does he have the physical tools, he's a very quiet, very humble kid who works his tail off nonstop. And that's the kind of dynamic out of a wide receiver, especially at a position where, let's be honest, normally there's a lot of prima donnas that play there, and Ocho Cincos and Terrell Owens out of that mold. He doesn't fit there at all. He's more of like a Marvin Harrison. He just puts his head down and keeps on grinding.
Well, that's good news for Raider Nation, and things are looking up for the Raiders, but what matters is wins on Sunday. What do you expect this team to do in the regular season?
You know, I've been asked that question quite a bit over the course of the last couple weeks, and I think with all the positivity coming out of Raiders camp, fans are thinking, oh, can we be a sneaky playoff team? How many times over the last couple years have you seen a team go from last place to first, or from last place, into a wild card berth, how the Kansas City Chiefs did a couple years back? And there I do want to pump the brakes, boys. I do think that the Raiders are better. Does that mean that they're going to be good? I'm not ready to say that exactly yet. their schedule is favorable, but when people say 8-8, 9-7, I would say that this is a team that's won 11 games over the last three seasons. So if they go come out and go 6-10 or 7-9, I think that shows great improvement for a young core of players that it continues to build upon itself with two and possibly three consecutive solid draft classes. And eventually the Raiders are in the financial spot to give these guys extensions. So what you could see here with 6-10 or 7-9 could be the beginning of a far better, longer period of sustained success, at least around 500 or above for this Raiders unit. But I mean, Rome wasn't built in just one day, and this Raiders team can't be reconstructed in just one season.
Well, yeah, I definitely agree with that, Scott. And one of the things you just said, Rome was not built in one day. And with some off-the-field issues, let's talk about something being built in the Oakland Raiders stadium. What is the saga going on there? Do you believe that the Raiders will stay in Oakland, or will they make an exodus to Los Angeles?
You know, I can tell you one thing, because anybody that tells you about what's going on in Los Angeles with absolute certainty is lying straight to your face. There's too many fluid things going on in San Diego, St. Louis, and Oakland and really within NFL owners to have a firm grasp on that. They don't know what's going to happen here. But here's one thing that I can say with absolute certainty is whether the Raiders stay in Oakland in the short term because they don't have a stadium, or they move to Los Angeles, it's not going to be their fault. It's not going to be their doing, because owner Mark Davis doesn't have the liquid cash to build a stadium on his own. So he either needs to be the silver medalist in Carson with the Chargers or in Inglewood with the St. Louis Rams. So, and he can't afford to just fully build his own stadium here in Oakland, and he needs public funds from the city of Oakland that I think we all know could use that general fund money to pay for cops and schools and a bunch of other very important things for this city that needs to get changed over the course of the next decade. And they don't need to get spent on stadium funds. So they're in sort of a conundrum right now. I think that there are a lot of possibilities in terms of where Oakland can go, where they can be dragged to or brought into the fray with. The one thing that I will say also is that the NFL is not going to leave the San Diego Chargers out in the cold. They're not going to put Dean Spanos on an island by bringing, let's say, two more teams in and then the Chargers not having a stadium solution in San Diego. That's why I think San Diego seems to be possibly the most likely to go to Los Angeles, no matter which stadium gets built. Stan Kroenke has the cash. Dean Spanos has a lot of positive equity within the NFL, and for as much as Mark Davis has done a very good job of garnering goodwill within league owners and trying to put his team in the right position to win the silver medal, they're still fighting an uphill battle. So who knows where they're going to be next year, or really probably more importantly in 3 years, and we don't know where their long-term solution is coming from because Oakland is below square one. And then Los Angeles, which is moving fast, they're still not exactly sure how the Raiders fit into that picture. That's as simple as I can possibly make it, I swear.
Well, let's hope that the Oakland Raiders, the city council, and everybody can come together and figure things out, because I do think it'd be a travesty for the Raiders to leave once again for any city. But that's just biasly speaking.
To have a fan base lose a team not only once but twice to what is really a rival region of the state is obviously difficult. Nobody wants that to happen, and that includes Mark Davis, who said time and time again that he wants to stay in Oakland, and knowing him and knowing people around him, that's not lip service. I think it's just a matter of being able to somehow, some way, pull a rabbit out of a hat, get this thing done.
Yes. Well, Scott, thank you for joining us here on the Double. For those of our listeners who would like to find out where you are at, you can catch Scott at Bear, BAIRCSN on Twitter, or you can go to csnbayarea.com/blog/Scott Bear. And of course, you can catch him, for all of our listeners here in Northern California, on at CSN Bay Area. And Scott, thanks for being on today, man.
Thanks, boys. Appreciate the time.
There goes Scott Bear of CSN Bay Area, and we have no time to rest. Let's go right back out to the HolySmokeNuts.com phone lines up to the Pacific Northwest, the Tacoma, Washington area, and welcome in rap artist Young June. Young June, what's going on, buddy? Apparently, Young June is...
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Pulling off. Okay, sounds like he's there. Young June, you there, buddy?
Yes, I am.
Hey, welcome to On the Double. Welcome to On the Double, Young June. Hey, man, we hear some great things that are going on with you up in the Pacific Northwest. And of course, as Sean Wally mentioned briefly, with No Limit, man. That's some great stuff. That's some great stuff. Congratulations. Kind of, you know, tell us how that jumped off.
Actually, I posted a video. I don't know. We had shot a video called Visionary, this big website that's called Worldstar. Didn't pretty much, you know, expect that to happen, but, you know, I posted it on a website, and supposedly I went.
Oh, looks like we lost Young June there. We're going to try to get him back.
You hear me?
Yes. Yeah, you're back?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Now you must be on the cell phone.
Yeah, I am.
Okay. All right. So we're gonna try
Sorry
to keep you with us here. No, that's okay. So you were explaining how you got on with No Limit.
You hear me right now?
Yes. Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Basically, I dropped a video that was called Visionary. I put it on the top website in the country, and once I put it on there, basically it went viral, and he had seen me. Which, you know, he usually doesn't pick people unless they're from New Orleans, but I guess I was the first. And he had seen it, gave me a call, and, you know, I was pretty surprised. And, life was different ever since.
Well, yeah, you definitely putting it down, man. I got a chance to listen to some of your stuff, and I'm, you know, first of all, I'm like, this is amazing, and just knowing where you came from, you know, in high school, actually going to Lakes High School, which is actually the rival of where I went to high school. So, you know, I have to say, give some shout out to the Lancers there. So you putting it down for them.
Lakes Lancer all day, man. FOE.
Now, of course, you being a rap artist, there are some other things that you are talented at, and I got a chance to peep that out. Man, you were doing some great things on the hardwood for the Lakes Lancers in 2012, leading them to a state championship. Man, what was that like?
It was a good experience because I had set out 1 year because I had transferred from Renton High School, and you know, I fortunately didn't get to play my junior or sophomore year. Because I had moved out here. So I only really played 2 years of high school ball. But I played my freshman year, and I got to play my senior year. My senior year, the two off seasons that I had, I pretty much put as much work in as I could, you know, that gave me that motivation. And when we was playing, you know, we had a good team. We had Zach Bannard. I went to USC. We had Isaac Winston, you know, big brother Andre Winston. We had it's like a football school, so you know we had a lot of good recruits, Cedric Dozier, Cal. Man, we were stacked. We had a lot of players, and it was one of them lifetime experiences. It felt good once we won it, man. And then you know a lot of offers opened up, and it was one of those good blessed moments.
Young June, what did you learn going for that championship in basketball at Lakes High School that you've been able to relate to your work ethic in your rap game?
Basically, when I set out them 2 years, you know, it showed me if I really put my mind to it, because I kept telling myself, I watched, when I first came out here, the first game I watched was Peyton Siva. You know, this man was amazing. I mean, and I forgot that other dude, he went to Bellevue. I think his name was Bright. He went to Stanford. Yeah, the first game I watched when they played, man, I'm like, dang, man, I gotta be like them. So basically, you know, I just referred that to rap. Like, you know what I mean? I look up to these other artists, and I'm like, man, if you want it, you can go get it. I wanted that state championship bad, so in that offseason, I put all the work in I could, and, you know, I got it.
Who have you been able to learn from, and who's taken you under their wing, probably at No Limit, that you look up to and they help you out?
I look up to a lot of people. There's a lot of artists that, you know, that look up to me. I mean, that I look up to. Like, I look up to Master P. I look up to Silk the Shocker, Romeo, Juvenile. You know, I'm also friends with a lot of other artists like Lil Wayne, J. Cole, YG. There's, I could keep going on for days. Wiz Khalifa from, you know, from my other spot that I grew up in as well. We're very close friends, and it just keeps going on. I just keep meeting new people. And, you know, pretty much I look up to everyone that made it in it. I respect them all because they were all in that same position I was. And, you know, they figured a way to make it out.
Young June joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. Now there, obviously your career, when it started, it didn't come without some adversity. And so there are some troubling times for you. You'd mentioned a little bit in high school, you know, how did you grow and how did you mature from, you know, those times of, you know, growing up hard?
Oh, man. I mean, when I first came out here, you got to remember where I'm from. You know, it's not a lot of people that get to make it out, you know. So by my childhood, I was hanging around the wrong people. So I got locked up when I was younger from, I think, about like sixth grade to eighth grade. And that's the reason why I moved out to Seattle. And, you know, this became my second home. But when I moved out here, I met some awesome and great people, and, you know, just the environment, being around these people, you know, Seattle, it's just amazing. Like, you know what I mean? It's a whole different experience. So, you know, when I got to play for, you know, Coach JoJo, and he was basically like a father to me, you know? So I just learned, like, I came out here, you know, a hard-headed kid, and then they turned me into a man, into the person I am today.
Now, of course, our young audience that is listening, you know, knows, you know, No Limit, understanding Master P, and you had the chance to, you know, be on a track with Ace B, Black and Mild, Alley Boy, man. Man, yeah. You're putting it down, man. So how was that cut?
That was good. I mean, me and Ace B's like family. Black and Mild, he basically produces everything. Alley Boy, great dude. He also, you know, came a long way. But working, you know, when everybody contributes to the table to come up with a great and awesome jam, man, I mean, it was fun coming up with that, especially shooting the video, you know. We went down to Cali and we shot it down there. And, you know, where I'm from, I never been to Cali, you know, just like I've never been to Seattle, but I moved out here. So it was just a blessing. And it was like, man, it's amazing. It's amazing, you know, when you pray and, you know, God can help you out.
Young June, joining us here on The Double. Now, Young June, what have you learned from fans of your music all over the country?
Man, it's crazy. They give me the craziest support, man. They give me hope. You know, I thought I would give them hope. They give me more motivation. And I just, you know, through my music, I just want my music to, you know, give that next kid that was in my spot, you know, motivation to keep going. And I just, the fans, they the best, man. Especially Seattle. I love Seattle. Also, shout out to Seattle. But I'm great people, great people.
What words of advice would you have for middle schoolers, high schoolers, young adults that want to get in the rap game?
Basically, the route, I would say, go to school first. Get your education. Music's always going to be there, you know. Also, get an education, learn. We won't, you know, I didn't find them. They found me. So, you know, if you're good enough and you make great music and you keep working on your craft, keep writing, keep making music, you won't find them because they will find you.
Definitely words of wisdom coming from Young June on the No Limit label. And, of course, repping the 206 in Seattle, bringing it all the way down to the 205 and the 504 and the 253 as well. We cannot leave that out. And, man, keep doing what you do. For those of you who want to find out what Young June is doing, you can go to Young, and that's Young. June, JUNNE.com. Again, youngjune.com to find out all the latest that's going on. Hey, Young, thanks for being on the show, man.
I appreciate it, man. Thanks. Thanks for giving me the opportunity to come on your show. It's a great show.
The pleasure's ours. Thank you so much for your time, Young June, a great guy doing great things out of the Pacific Northwest. Stay tuned after the break where we've got our third guest tonight, and that is sports broadcaster extraordinaire and author Mel Proctor. You're listening to On the Double with the Double S Express.
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services, platinum service without the platinum price.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy.
Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name. Yeah. 'Cause you're burning with the brush flame. Yeah.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. And let's go right back out to the Chandler Reach Winery Hotline and welcome sports broadcasting extraordinaire and author Mel Proctor. Mel, thanks for your time tonight.
Hi, guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, Mel, let's get right to it. Man, you are a person after my own interest. And Sean Wally's, I mean, some of the things that you have done as far as play-by-play is concerned with the Texas Rangers, Baltimore Orioles, Washington Nationals, to name a few. Man, how long did it take for you to get to that level, to the professional level that we aspire to get to?
Well, you know, after I got out of college, I started off working for NFL Films in Philadelphia as a writer, producer on football films, and really didn't know I wanted to get into broadcasting, but I got to know a lot of the announcers who came in to narrate the films and thought, well, you know, I could do what they're doing, and I'd much rather be at the games than in some darkened editing room. So I started off doing high school games. I convinced somebody to hire me, and started doing high school games and just moved on up, went to Hawaii on vacation and got a job there, which was my big break, really, where I met Earl McDaniel, a former L.A. disc jockey who ran the station and really was my mentor and good friend for 40 years. I couldn't have had a better guy to learn from, which is so important in this business if you have a good mentor. So that's, you know, how I got most of my experience in Hawaii in 5 years and doing the University of Hawaii in minor league baseball. And then I took a job with the Washington Bullets in Washington, D.C. and spent 17 years with the Bullets off and on. You know, occasionally I'd go to the New Jersey Nets for a couple of years, then I'd come back. It was, you know, this business is crazy where it takes you.
Now, of course, Mel, you were saying that you spent some time in Hawaii trying to get things off the ground. Was there ever a point to where you thought that maybe this wouldn't get off the ground?
Yeah, you know, it's really amazing. For several years, I'd been trying to either get a Major League Baseball job or an NBA job, and I'd come close several times, but it just wasn't happening. So I can still remember sitting with my girlfriend at that time, now my wife, sitting there, and we just decided, well, you know, it's probably not going to happen, so let's just make the best of it. We live in Hawaii, after all. So I kind of resigned myself to just staying there, and the phone rang. It was WTOP in Washington offering me the Bullets play-by-play job. 2 hours later, the phone rang again. It was Irv Case, the general manager of the San Diego Clippers. And they wanted to hire me. So all of a sudden, on the same day, within a couple hours of each other, I got two job offers. So that's how quickly it can change.
So persistence definitely paying off and people noticing what you're doing when you're not necessarily out there throwing your name out there, knocking down doors.
Yeah, I figured I was so isolated in Hawaii that nobody really knew who I was. And if they did, they probably thought I was, you know, wearing a grass skirt and running around with Mai Tais in either hand, which was probably true. But, I thought they didn't know who I was. But word travels fast when you're in the business and you have some talent and, you know, you work at it, at getting your name out there. I was fortunate because what really led to my first job was in Hawaii, they used to have a couple of basketball tournaments, the Rainbow Classic, and I forget what the other one was called. But a lot of pro general managers would come over to watch these teams. And I got to know a lot of them, including Bob Ferry, who was general manager of the Bullets at the time. And, you know, we developed a friendship, and he heard my work. And when something opened up with the Bullets, they just won a world championship. So I called Bob, and I said, you know, does this job involve play-by-play with the Bullets? He said, yes, it does. He said, you know, I'd be glad to put in a word for you. So things like that would help.
Mel, how has the business changed over the years with social media and things like YouTube? Has it made it easier to be found and get jobs, or potentially tougher because there's so many people competing for those jobs?
Boy, that's an interesting question. Now you got to wear a lot of hats, not only be on the air, but handle the Twitter and LinkedIn and everything else, and I can't even keep track of it all. It's changed so much. What has changed, though, I'm not sure for the better, is that there aren't too many small radio stations that do local sports like high school and college, which I thought was the greatest training ground in the world. And that's, you know, really how I got my experience. A little station outside of Philadelphia, I was there for about a year and a half until I took the job in Hawaii. I was a helicopter flying overhead. I must have done something wrong. So it's, you know, there are not those radio stations around anymore to really get your foot in the door. And I think learning to paint a picture on radio is becoming a lost art. And all these guys now are coming up through broadcast schools and going right into television in some form. And to me, they all sound alike, or at least a lot of them. You know, you don't get too many of the good personalities that used to exist from guys who began on radio.
Mel Proctor, broadcaster, actor, and book author, joining us here on The Double. Now, let's talk about the books that you have written. Of course, your first book was The Official Fan Guide to the Fugitive. So how was that? What made you decide to write a book of that nature?
Well, when I was growing up, it was my favorite television show of all time. And then years later, I guess in the late 80s, they were showing reruns on A&E, and I watched the show, and I was taken by it all over again. It was just, you know, great writing and amazing people who were starting their careers out as guest stars. And David Janssen was a fabulous television actor. He played Dr. Richard Kimball. So I had some time one winter and decided I'm going to explore this a little bit, and managed to track down a guy who was the producer, Alan Armour, and then he put me in touch with John Conwell, a wonderful man who was a casting director for all of Quinn Martin's productions, and he had a bunch of shows on television then. And he put me in touch with actors and actresses and writers and producers and all of these people. So on my road trips with the Bullets and the Orioles, I would arrange to see people like Lieutenant Gerard Barry Morris up in Toronto when I was there. And so, you know, it took about a year to do all these interviews and everything, and then I wrote the book.
And, of course, there was another book that you wrote, I believe, pertaining to your craft as far as a broadcaster and actor and book author. I love the work, but I hate the business. And so,
yeah, that came out about a year. That came out about a year ago, a little over a year ago. And, it should be mandatory reading for anybody thinking about following the path into broadcasting, because it's filled with funny anecdotes, mostly about my experiences and the people I knew and the events that I described. But it's also about the other side, the people you have to deal with, unfortunately, in this business, who are in positions of power. And in broadcasting, it's unique. A lot of the people who make on-the-air decisions have never been on the air themselves. They've come from sales or promotion or somewhere else. And they're really not broadcasters, and they're really not sports fans. They're just trying to further their own careers. And every new guy wants to make changes, and they come in and make changes and ruin lives and then move on to someplace else. So that's the part of the business I don't like.
Safe to say, Mel, that those are the frustrating parts of the business. What are, conversely, your favorite parts?
Well, I love sports. I grew up in sports. My dad was a high school coach, and I played basketball and baseball in high school and college. So I've always loved sports. So just being around sports, I love and the people I get to know. I treasure the time I've spent with the partners I've worked for, like John Lowenstein and Jim Palmer and Mike Flanagan with the Orioles, and Phil Chenier for years on the Bullets, Ronnie Darling in Washington for a year, Rick Sutcliffe out here in San Diego. You know, getting a chance to know people like that, and describing the events. I mean, I was fortunate; I got to go to the NBA Finals my first year in the league with the Bullets, and you know, I've described been to the World Series and NFL playoff games, and just about everything. My favorite, though, was when Cal Ripken broke Lou Gehrig's consecutive game streak at Camden Yards, and I was there for that game. So, also Tony Gwynn's 3,000th hit. So, a lot of thrills.
When you think back over three decades of sports broadcasting, do you ever sit and think, man, all of the events and the thrills and the great moments in sports history that you've been a part of?
You know, I've always been so busy pursuing my career and getting on a plane, going to the arena, and preparing for another game, and that I never really had time to sit down and reflect on it. But when I after I left the Padres, it was, and then 2007, Tony Gwynn and Cal Ripken were both going into the Baseball Hall of Fame, and I had described, you know, both of their exploits. So I said, I'm going to Cooperstown, even if I have to pay it myself. So I went to Cooperstown and was there for the ceremony and went to parties for both guys. And that's when it hit me about what I'd accomplished and what I'd been around. And I had time to finally reflect back on it. And that's how this book came about. I thought, you know, I've really had an amazing life and career and with them ups and downs, and, you know, maybe people would enjoy reading about it. So that's how it began.
Now, Mel, of course, you know, staying with the author theme, you have a new book that's out, The Little General, Gene Mock, A Baseball Life. And so tell us a little bit about that book.
Well, again, it's, you sometimes wonder why life puts you in a particular place. And I had left the Padres, not of my own volition, but was out of work and took a job in Palm Springs, California with a startup television station. It was in 2002, and the Angels were in the World Series against the Giants. And I knew Gene Mock lived there, and among the teams he'd managed were the California Angels. And he was retired in his 70s then, so I thought it might be good to put him on the air with me as a pregame and postgame analyst before and after World Series games. So I went over to his house, and we talked about it. And I said, Gene, you know, we can't afford to pay you because it's a brand-new station. We don't have any advertising revenue. And he said, oh, just get me a gross of my favorite golf balls, and I'll do it. So I worked out a trade with a golf shop, and Gene did it. And as I suspected, he was amazing. Still loved baseball, loved the success of the Angels. He would play golf all day and have the recorder running, and he'd tape four games, and then he'd watch them at night, sit around, have a cocktail or two, and watch the game. So he was on top of everything, and I was amazed. And we developed a friendship for a couple of years until he passed away. But, you know, the more I looked into Gene and talked to people who knew him, I found out what a fascinating guy this is, or was. So I decided to write the book.
And for those of our listeners who don't know who Gene Mock is, which the majority should, of course, he was a very fiery type of a manager and brought a grand spectacle to the game as well.
Even more than that, he was probably the smartest, most cerebral manager ever. His peers in the game all say, you know, Dick Williams, Sparky Anderson, and all of those people said, you know, he was the best. He won over 1,900 games, but never made it to the World Series. He was involved with three of the biggest failures. In 1964 with the Phillies, they were up by six games with 12 and a half to go, and they lost 10 in a row and didn't make it. With the Angels in 82, he was one out away from getting to the World Series and lost. And then the worst one was in 86 when in the fifth game of the the playoffs that year, the ALCS, Dave Henderson, the Red Sox, hit a home run off Donnie Moore to beat them and sent the Angels reeling, and they lost the remaining games in the series. And unfortunately, Donnie Moore later killed himself. So Gene was in the center of a lot of things that happened, and was also one of the great innovators in the game. A lot of things that are used now, like the double switch, Gene started, and a number of different rules that are in effect because of things that Gene did. He was amazing. He said he played three games or managed three games. There was the one beforehand that he managed in his mind and charted everything out and anticipated every possible situation. Then it was the actual game played on the field. And the third game was the one he played in his mind after the game was over, analyzing everything. And he took notes and had notebooks filled with stuff from games and about players. And I mean, he was really the computer before they were using computers. He was just so smart and so sharp.
Yeah, Gene was definitely a mastermind and his craft. And, you know, he did some great things for Major League Baseball. Now, Mel, of course, for you, there are a lot of things that you have done, and we've mentioned them as far as, you know, doing play-by-play for many professional sports and writing books and all of these things. Is there a bucket list, or is there anything left that you would like to accomplish?
Yeah, I'd like to get another broadcasting job, but unfortunately, again, getting back to I love the work, but I hate the business. When you get older in this business, they don't want you anymore. They want to hire somebody young and cheap. So I'd love to get back broadcasting if anybody's out there listening. Love to do that and then continue to write and do some of the other things. But I enjoy being on the air more than anything. And I think my favorite was radio play-by-play on NBA basketball. I thought that was the most fun, exciting thing that I've ever done. I'd love to do it again.
Now, Mel, what advice would you have for people looking to get into the sports broadcasting world?
Win 20 games or be an All-American. Boy, seriously.
Yeah.
Those guys can walk right into the booth whether they have any talent or not. But if you're just an average Joe like me, it's a little different now because many colleges have broadcast majors and broadcast departments where you can really get some good training, and most of them have campus radio stations where you can get on-air experience. And then after that, it's pretty much the same. You just start sending out resumes and tapes, and now they send them MP3 out instead of just the old tapes. But banging on doors, talking to people. And you better love what you're doing or what you want to do, because it is so tough and so frustrating that you know, you can get knocked on your butt, and you probably will. And if you learn to get back up, keep going, you can make a career out of it.
Mel, who are guys in the sports broadcasting business that you looked up to and that took you under your wing and kind of guided you to where you're at today?
Well, I grew up in Denver, which was not a big league town at the time. And so I didn't really emulate any of the broadcasters there. There was a minor league broadcaster named Bill Reed, who was a friend of my dad's, I suppose to some extent him. But there, you know, and there weren't really any big league games in that market. So, you know, I watched Dizzy Dean and Pee Wee Reese and Dizzy Dean and Buddy Blattner, and certainly didn't pattern myself after Dizzy Dean. But so I didn't really have any idols. All along, I think that allowed me to develop my own style, for better or for worse. I mean, so many guys come along, and I remember when I worked in the Pacific Coast League, there were four guys doing their Vin Scully imitations. So,
wow, I can imagine. You know,
but the man I mentioned, the man who really helped me, was Earl McDaniel, who had been on the air in Los Angeles, big-time disc jockey, and gotten into management. He said he got tired of getting fired, and so he got into management, eventually became president of Heftel Broadcasting. And he taught me more about being on the air and also the other side of the business, what to look out for, you know, how to conduct yourself, what to say. Without him, I wouldn't have had a career.
There's Mel Proctor. Of course, Mel, thanks for being on the show here. There are some tremendous, tremendous insight that you have given us. And for our listeners out there, be sure to check out the book, The Little General, Gene Mock, A Baseball Life. That is out through Cardinal Publishing. And again, Mel, thank you for being on the show. It was great talking with you, man. I've learned a lot. I've learned a lot, and hopefully moving forward, I can take some of these jewels that you've given us, and you'll see us probably with a professional team near you.
Yeah, well, buy my book, I Love the Work, But I Hate the Business. That should be a primer for people like you.
Yes, definitely.
And all of these books, by the way, are available at Amazon and at Barnes & Noble and most reputable bookstores.
Mel Proctor, thank you so much for your time. We will definitely go out and grab those books and continue learning from your wisdom. Thank you for your time and insight.
Sean and Sean, thank you, guys.
There goes Mel Proctor. Of course, again, a couple of the books that we're talking about, The Little General, Gene Mock, A Baseball Life. And, of course, I Love the Work, But I Hate the Business. Two great books, Sean Wally.
Barnes & Noble, Amazon, a few sports stores actually have them, so definitely check those out. Great books about the sports world and sports broadcasting. Mel Proctor doing great things. So we'll return after this here on The Double with the Double S Express.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret, a new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product, helped me a lot. It took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally and Sean Boy. Standing in the Hall of Fame. Yeah. And the world's gonna know your name.
Cause you burn with the brush flame. Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally alongside Sean Boyd. Together in the same room in the 916.
Yeah, Ben, and you know, out of all of the times that we've done shows, and I believe we've done 116 thus far, my goodness, you've been all over the world. And this, Sean Wally, would have to be the first time that we're in the same studio, the EG Studios. Actually, the second time that we're here in the same studios. And man, this is some fun stuff, man.
It's definitely quite a bit easier to run a show, being able to see each other and you know, get our hand signals right and be in the same room. That definitely helps, because when I'm two states away or, heck, many countries away, it can be a little bit trying at times.
To say the least, man. But this is definitely a fun show. And, of course, it has been action-packed, man. We've had not one, not two, but three awesome guests, and we brought a big broad spectrum with us also. We talked a little bit about play-by-play and commentating. We've had a young rapper / actor involved, and of course our first guest does the insider, and you know, we talk a lot about the Pacific Northwest sports, and it's good to have a change of pace there and bring in the Oakland Raiders, and then Scott Bear bringing that, the Raiders insider from CSN Bay Area.
Yeah, it's definitely been a fun show. Lots of great guests tonight, and we try to do that every single week times two, tonight times three. And, Sean, you mentioned the Pacific Northwest. there was an NFL football game Friday night in Seattle.
Yeah, there was a, you know, it was a great football game, to say the least. I know as far as the fans in Seattle, the outcome wasn't the way that you wanted it, but it was a good football game. You know, of course, the Denver Broncos came into town, wound up beating the Seahawks 22-20. And, of course, it's preseason, and we know that a lot of second, third stringers got a chance to play. But it was a good football game as a whole. So what did we learn, though, Sean Wally, as far as the starters were concerned in that contest?
Well, there weren't too many for the Seattle Seahawks that actually played very much time or any at all. You didn't see Marshawn Lynch. You didn't see any of the big names, the Legion of Boom. Russell Wilson was in there for two quick series, did complete one nice pass to Jimmy Graham, the new weapon on Seattle's offense. But beyond that, Seattle learned that, hey, we're not perfect. Number one, you don't have to be in week one of the preseason. Number two, there's a lot to work on. Even though we're the two-time defending NFC champions and we've been to the Super Bowl two straight years, 1-1, came 3 feet away from the second victory, there are some issues. And we need to do more than just Band-Aid them, and we have to get better. And that's what the preseason's all about. Yes, it would have been nice to win the game, and all the fans would have been happy, which CenturyLink Field was packed for a first preseason game. But the bottom line is you want to stay healthy. And for the most part, they did that. Backup quarterback Tavares Jackson, probably the biggest injury. He's going to miss a few weeks with a high ankle sprain. Those don't always heal the fastest, so Seattle's deciding what to do. Whether or not they bring in a new quarterback to back up Russell Wilson or not, or stay with the rest of the youngsters they have on the squad. Chris Matthews, the receiver that had a breakout game in the Super Bowl, has an AC sprain of his shoulder joint, so that's going to take probably 2 weeks to heal up, but nothing major outside of those.
Now, you know, we had big-time guest Aaron Levine on the double last week, and one of the things that he was concerned about was the offensive line. And of course, there were a few players that have been shifted from defense to offense. And that concern that he mentioned was the stability of the offensive line. That showed up with the first group this past week. Is this something that Seattle can fix in a hurry?
Well, Sean, their offensive line coach is a guy you know well, former head coach down here in Oakland, one Tom Cable. Pride of Snohomish, Washington. And if anybody will get the offensive line right, it is Tom Cable. He won't settle for anything less than the best. The big thing with the offensive line right now for the Seahawks, they lost an all-pro center in Max Unger when they traded him away to New Orleans to get Jimmy Graham in return. To get something big, you have to give up something big. And Max Unger is a very good center. He's been having health issues the last couple of years. He hasn't played a full season for a while. But he still knows the offense. He's an all-pro. And now they're trying to fill his position, and some other young guys are still trying to be groomed and get better as they progress forward.
Now, of course, Seattle doesn't rest. They come in this Friday with a game against the Kansas City Chiefs. And, of course, there's going to be a little bit more playing time. You might see Marshawn Lynch. You might see Richard Sherman back as well. So when these guys come back, we could see – a little bit of a difference on both sides of the football. And, you know, yeah, it's just the first game, but at the same time, you know, you want to see your team get off to a great start.
And you know who did get off to a great start in Seattle? Tyler Lockett. Amazing on kickoff and punt returns. The touchdown of 103 yards that Pete Carroll might have got a little nicked up there as Pete was too far on the sideline, got ran into by the side judge, but hey, Pete's not paying attention. That's not Tyler's fault.
So Pete gets hammered by the official running up the sideline, and as soon as the official runs Pete over, he pulls out the flag. There is no doubt that those coincided as far as the, what do they call, sideline participation by the players. You know, I know that, you know, if you're an official and you're trying to do your job, the last thing you want is some obstacle in the way. It was quite funny, though. You know, I mean, Pete Carroll is over 70 years old, and this guy can take it, or he's got to be pretty close, taking a hit. And, you know, man, that was something to see.
You know, funny for everybody other than Pete Carroll.
Come on, this guy, you know, he's made of iron. He's produced some strong football teams over the years here. And so, you know, he shook it off. And, you know, just like I believe the Seahawks will shake it off, they'll bounce right back this weekend playing against Kansas City.
So, Sean, the Seattle Mariners, the Oakland A's, the two teams we follow in the AL West, had a rough weekend.
Well, I mean, you know, the Seattle Mariners had, yeah, I guess it was, you could say it was a rough weekend, but they're still, you and I had talked about this today, they still have a chance. They're about six games out in the wild card spot. You know, as far as the Oakland A's are concerned, we've cashed it in a long time ago. And, you know, it's just one of those things. Sonny Gray coming off of an injury here. We're not sure if he's going to actually start the next game. There's been a surplus of players that have been traded. You know, it's just one of those things. You know, an off year for the Oakland A's. They lost again today to the Baltimore Orioles 5-3. And as we speak with the Seattle Mariners, they're playing the Texas Rangers. I believe the last we had checked, the score was 3-3. But it might have changed, you know, in the past few minutes here.
Well, I can update that for you. All I have to say is Fernando Rodney, and that'll tell Mariner fans what most likely happened. He did blow the game, a 3-3 tie in the ninth, bottom of the ninth in Arlington, and it is now over. Texas wins 4-3.
You know, if we go back about 20, 30 shows, and one of the things we talked about Fernando Rodney and how you really like Fernando. You liked how Fernando pointed the arrow to the sky, and I just couldn't stand it, and it really bugged me. And I'd like to take credit, Sean Wally, for the fact that this knucklehead, anyway, he's blowing save after save. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things. Maybe he should pitch instead of worrying about his little stance pointing to the heavens.
Well, hey, he got to shoot that arrow 48 times last summer, but man, he can't seem to figure anything out here in 2015.
Well, he has some chargebacks in 2015, so we can minus a few of those, I guess. But no, I don't wish that kind of stuff. I mean, you know, he's a professional athlete. I'm sure that he's going to fix some of the things that he is doing wrong. Time is running out. Again, they have a chance being about six games out of the wild card. There has to be a lot of things that happen, Sean Wally, before these guys can actually move up. One of them is to beat the teams that are in front of them, the Texas Rangers, the Houston Astros, even the Los Angeles Angels, who are taking a dive as of late. So, you know, that's just in their division, and we're not talking about the other teams who have better records in the other divisions.
Yeah, it's not going to be an easy task, but the Mariners have to be consistent and stop this. Hey, we're going to win three series in a row like they did last week, and then they just got dive-bombed by the Red Sox in two games, lost that series. Now they've lost another game, so they've lost three out of four. Yes, they can turn it around and win the series in Texas if they get the next two games, but goodness, just don't pitch Fernando Rodney anymore.
So, you know, for us in Northern California with the Oakland A's, my biggest thing is, you know, because we share a stadium and that baseball field sits right there at the beginning of the NFL season, the sooner the A's get out of this thing, the sooner we can get some grass on the field. And I'm looking forward to that there will be a full field of grass for after we'll look at week three, because that's normally when the Oakland A's are out, when they're out of the regular season. So should be early in the season. There's the Oakland Raiders start out, I believe, at home and then two on the road. So by week four, we should have that field looking nice.
Sean, I know you watch a lot of ESPN and surf the web and keep up on your sports. What is your take on Percy Harvin running his mouth in Buffalo, talking about all the problems in Seattle, the Doug Baldwins, the Jermaine Curses, that they're, you know, they were scared of him and didn't want him taking reps from him. And he tried to walk away and not get in fights. And then he just ended up finally having to hit somebody.
Well, you know, he's on a team that is, you know, trying to make themselves better. He's on a Rex Ryan team, and, you know, he wants to basically come out and play strong football. he should do just that, Sean Wally. There's no reason for him to, you know, to bring up stuff in the past. I mean, what's done is done. He had his chance with New York to do some great things. As a matter of fact, he was on my fantasy league and did nothing for me. And so I will not pick Percy Harvin this year. But, you know, as far as Percy as a player, I still think he has a couple of good years left. But again, no reason to throw dirt at the team that you formerly played for. There, nothing ever comes good out of it, and I'm sure at some point they're going to play head-to-head. And I would put money on the Legion of Boom over Percy Harvin doing any damage against that defense.
And it's funny that Percy Harvin is touting himself and as you're saying, throwing dirt on the Seahawks receivers, because out of all those guys, Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse, Golden Tate, Percy Harvin, who's the guy that's been on four teams in the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, you know, there's no doubt that Percy has had some issues. He's had migraine issues over, you know, in his career. He's a great athlete. Of course, he gets injured quite a bit, and that's one of the knocks with him. But more importantly, every team that he's been on, as you'd mentioned, four teams in a short period of time, there've been behavioral issues that have involved Percy Harvin. So, you know, whether it's him face to face with his quarterback in Seattle, or whether he's up fighting against, you know, some other teammates on other teams, at some point he has to look in the mirror and say, look, it isn't those guys. It has to be me. I'm the one that's moving around. So he has a chance in Buffalo. Let him take that chance. But yeah, there's no need to do the stuff that he's doing, you know, with the former team. And, you know, it again, it is what it is.
And Percy is the common denominator. And I find it funny that he's touting himself and saying that he wasn't the problem, yet in the same breath, he says the Seahawks got back to the Super Bowl because they traded me.
Well, a lot of the times when you have a problem, you're the last to know. And so, you know, that's the case with Percy. He's the last to know, and he can, you know, either do something about it by changing the way that he thinks and changing the things that he does, or he can continue to do the things that he does and wind up being a journeyman and probably being on two or three more teams before his short career, I'd probably say two more years, is up.
116 shows, Sean. It's been a great one tonight. Special thanks to our three big-time guests tonight, Scott Baer of CSN Bay Area, covering all things Oakland Raiders, Young June, a rap artist under the No Limit label, Pacific Northwest native the last 8 years, graduate. He went to Lakes High School in Steilacoom, the Tacoma, Steilacoom area. And broadcast extraordinaire, sports broadcaster, play-by-play guy, Mel Proctor, book author. The newest book out from Mel Proctor, The Little General Gene Mock, A Baseball Life, available at Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and through Cardinal Publishing. Sean, 116, that is a big number, and so is one that you turned on Saturday. Happy late birthday, Sean Boyd.
Thank you very much, man. I'm starting to get into my mature years, turning age 25, and I appreciate that, man. I appreciate you guys being out and having fun, and, you know, that's what it's all about, family and friends coming together, and, you know, it was a joy. And, of course, having you here this weekend and being here in the palatial EG Studios in Elk Grove, California, you know, one of our many studios on the double with the Double S Express. And man, it's been fun.
And thank you for turning the thermostat to extremely high for me. I really appreciate the 105 degrees. Can't even step outside. It's so hot.
Oh, my goodness, man. That's what we deal with in Northern California. It's one of those things. And, man, did you feel the earthquake today? That's one of the things. So, you know, there was an earthquake this morning in Northern California, actually about 70, 80 miles from Sacramento, Elk Grove area. That was over in the Piedmont areas towards Oakland. It was a 4.0 on the Richter, and I didn't feel a thing, man. I don't know if you did.
And we didn't fall in the ocean?
So you can truly say you're down in California, man, and you witnessed one of the earthquakes and you didn't feel a doggone thing. How about that?
That works for me because I do not like it when the ground shakes.
Well, man, show number 116 in the books. Be sure to tune in to On the Double with the Double S Express every Monday. You can go to bbsradio.com/DSX, or you can download the app BBS Radio on your smartphone. You can check us out in the archives. You can go to www.double-s-express.com. And you can also catch us on Twitter as well. Whew. Man, it's been a great show. It's been a great week, a great weekend, spending time with family and friends on my birthday. It's some awesome stuff. Before I go, I'd like to send a shout out to Houston, Texas, who has tuned into On the Double with the Double S Express. A shout out to Carolyn Carey out there, along with Kyrus Carey. Thank you for tuning in to On the Double with the Double Express. We appreciate you guys, all of the listeners who listen to us. As we say on the Double S Express, you're not in the game until you take a shot. And when you take a shot, we hope that it hits nothing but the bottom of the net. We got one more thing from Sean Wally.
Who am I going to coach in a few weeks or months?
Yes, that's one of the things that we didn't talk about today. We will talk about that next week. There have been some great things that have been going on. We've had some texts, some emails. Everything's been coming in on that. We will definitely touch base on that. Sean Wally and the Washington Generals no longer, but we're going to find out what's going on in the week to come. Still has a job, still traveling with the Globetrotters. Stay tuned, everybody. This has been a DSX LLC production. You've been listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. We'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to On the Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for some more great sports talk and big-time guests. On the Double with the Double S Express.